having so much fun on a radio show.
Fun within prescribed limits.
And now it's time for America's favorite daytime fun show.
Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios. This is the George Plaster Show.
He is the holder of a PhD, an MA, a BA, and is a BMF besides.
Get in on the George Plaster Show. 615-844-5600. 615-844-5600. Or online at WNSR.com. And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome into the show on a Wednesday afternoon. We have a good show for you. I think it'll be a spicy show. Got Watson Brown joining us from up on the plateau. Watson, hope you're doing well.
George, I'm doing great. You, I hope.
I'm doing very well. Terry?
Fantastic.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Okay. Excellent. I'd like to read you all to begin today's scripture reading. There's a
what
story.
Book is it from?
The walls are falling in.
Well, Chris Lowe has written a story. We're going to spend a lot of the 3 o'clock hour on it. Watson, I gather by your laughter, you've now read it.
Most of it. I was trying to finish it as the show came on, so you may have to help me with the end piece, but it's hilarious.
It's called fantastic, dude. Trash Talk, Mattress Fires, and a Flying Projector. Lane Kiffin's Year at Tennessee. And what I'm going to do, we're going to spend a lot of the 3 o'clock hour on this story. And honestly, it doesn't matter to me whether some of you listening go ahead and read it or not, but trust me, it'll blow your mind. I'm going to give you one little excerpt from the beginning of it. Remember, this is 2009. Team meetings at the Birmingham Marriott were winding down the night before Tennessee was set to take on top-ranked and undefeated Alabama. And Ed Orgeron wanted everybody's attention. Speaking of which, let us honor Ed Orgeron very quickly with one of his finest moments.
John Embry, another great young man from Destrehan, Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you.
To get the ball.
That's a great piece.
This is your profession. Remember that.
That's my profession, baby.
I'm
going
to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey, stop the ball. Stop the drill. I'm having a press conference. Thank you.
Touche.
To get the balls pumped up, the fiery defensive line coach took an overhead projector and hurled it into a wall where it shattered into pieces. Then it was Lane Kiffin's turn. The brash young head coach had an announcement. He gets up there and says, quote, "I've already called back to the University of Tennessee and told them that we're going to stay an extra night after we beat Alabama tomorrow. And we're going to go eat some of those Dreamland ribs and hang out at their bars," recounted Marlon Walls, then a freshman defensive lineman. The whole room went wild, including Kiffin's father, Monty, who at the time was the Vols' 69-year-old defensive coordinator. And here's a quote, "I believe Monty even picked up a chair and threw it." Then senior defensive lineman Wes Brown said, "Whatever we could get our hands on, we were throwing. It was total chaos." So that's how Chris begins this deal. And we're going to hold it until 3 o'clock and then really talk about some of it, because it is one flew over the damn cuckoo's nest. But because you all have enjoyed this so much, can we hear from Coach O one last time? He'll eventually be with us.
He'll talk like this.
When he is, it's a piece of work. I'll tell you.
He is.
Go for it, Coach O.
Okay, let's see. I think I threw our producer under the bus.
I think maybe he threw the soundboard into the wall.
He might have, right. Okay, so Coach O, he's with us. Here we go.
John Embry, another great young man from Destrehan, Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you.
Okay.
Great young man. On a scrimmage, we wanted to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey, I think we've got
stop
enough.
Lord
have mercy.
So that was the Coach O at Tennessee. Now, of course, the head coach at LSU. But here are some things that are going on in the world of sports. Really a heartwarming story today coming out of Louisville, where Rick Pitino has settled a $35 million lawsuit with the school. The school saying that Pitino did not get any money, but it also indicates that through this suit that his leaving Louisville is the result of a resignation. That's part of the settlement. It goes down as a resignation. So, Watson, let me ask you this.
Unbelievable.
Do you believe that any Division I school will attempt to hire Rick Pitino?
Desperate enough. I've seen it before. It seems to come back around. You just get totally desperate, and he's available. The ones that don't seem to get hired are the ones that did something kind of out of the coaching ranks, you know, like Hugh Freeze and that kind of stuff. The guys that seem to get in trouble, like this one was over the with Adidas, right? It wasn't Nike. I think it's Adidas.
Well, it also involved things going on in the dorm room.
Well, true. There was some player things, but it wasn't right. It wasn't the coach himself.
No, because he didn't know anything about any of it.
I don't say no. I don't say no to anything anymore. I've watched it. I see people I don't think will ever get a shot. The one that hasn't is Art Briles, and that one was pretty ugly now. There was a lot of rape things in that.
Yeah.
And he just hadn't, even when he got hired at the high school there in Texas, and it'd be interesting to look up and see how they're doing. I'd like to know that myself at the school. And I bring up Art because I'm good friends with Art. And I go way back with Art because I told you we used to talk ball together all the time, and long time ago, back in the 80s. And he's the one that just hadn't been touched. And somebody even tried to hire him as an assistant, and the school went crazy. So, but the guys that seem to get in trouble for cheating or something like that, George, they seem to reappear a lot of times.
Anyway, that's certainly a heartwarming story today coming out of Louisville. It's one that I have.
He didn't get fired, right? That's basically what came out of it. He didn't get fired. He resigned. Isn't that what you said?
Well, according to the lawsuit, his leaving.
Well, congratulations.
Yes. Meanwhile, the district attorney, Allegheny County in Pittsburgh, saying that because the allegation is more than 2 years old, they will not prosecute Antonio Brown. Now, I'm sure some of you have paid some attention to this. The young lady, the accuser, spent 10 hours a couple of days ago in the NFL offices. 10 hours is a long time. They must have had one hell of a conversation. Terry, I guess for me, I am surprised that the NFL didn't just say, listen, we're going to use the card that we have, the exempt list, and we're basically going to say the water's too hot right now. Until we know you're innocent, you're just going to sit here and chill out.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that they didn't go that route too, especially because Antonio Brown has been in the headlines for so many things. And then this right here was the absolute topper because, you know, it involves such a serious allegation. But nonetheless, it looks like that the Patriots have made off like bandits in the short term with Antonio Brown playing Sunday in, against Miami and, you know, having success right out of the gate with them. And, you know, while I'm sure there are a lot of people just like you going, why is he even on the field?
Oh, I am absolutely saying that. I don't get it. But the NFL, I'm not saying they've looked the other way because they have, you know, had this massive interview with the woman who is the accuser. So clearly they want to know. But I think given his recent history, he shouldn't have been playing at all.
Probably not. And that's the thing that gets me with Roger Goodell and the NFL is that there's really no, ever since the Ray Rice incident, there's really been no consistency in the way that they mete out their justice. Do you agree?
Yes, totally.
Well, and guys, Adrian Peterson too. Terry, let me ask you a question because you're more into this than me. Are in the NFL, do these teams, like in college, the NCAA might come in, but the team's going to make their decisions long before the NCAA does anything. In the NFL, does everybody just wait on the NFL, or do the teams make – do we ever see a team just discipline the guy and it doesn't come from the NFL? How does that work?
Once in a while, you will see the team discipline a player, but most of the time, you know, that's usually conduct detrimental to the team or something like that. But most of the time,
yeah, being late to a meeting or something, all, something like this, does a team ever do it?
Most of the time, it's left to the league to hand out the discipline. And I think part of the reason that that is because one, you've got lots of money involved. You know, these are professional players who are being paid lots of money to play a game. Two, you've got the collective bargaining agreement, which gives the players certain rights and certain legalities that they can, you know, have at their disposal when these sorts of things come up. So I think it's really a situation where the clubs very seldom want to dip their toe into it when they know that the league can take care of these matters for them. Now, it has been happened, you know, it has happened like you mentioned before. You know, there was a time here where Jeff Fisher suspended Pac-Man Jones for one game for, you know, one of his 10,000 incidents while he was here, you know. And, you know, the league did not, you know, hand down that punishment at that time. They later suspended him for the whole year over that thing in Vegas and a couple of incidents in Georgia that he had not reported to the league. So by and large, the NFL allows the commissioner's office to hand out the vast majority of the discipline.
So then, George, to me, then the Patriots get a pass. I mean, they're waiting on the league to do something, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
That's why I asked that question. I don't understand if that's the case, what Terry is saying, and it makes sense to me, then they really can't touch it because you're messing with players' unions and you're messing with a lot of stuff here. So they let the league do it. So then if the league doesn't come down and say he can't play, then he plays. That's the way I see it, which makes it a lot easier than being a college coach. Because we have to make our own decisions. And, I mean, I can remember being at a place once as an assistant, and we thought there was a violation, an NC2A violation. So we're sitting here saying, well, do we play this kid? We're going to turn this in. And is this a big enough violation that we could lose games as we play him? And then they come back and take the games away that we win, and we didn't play the kid? We didn't play the kids. So it's a total different operation. It's a lot easier on the Patriots and the coach than it is in college.
Well, one of the things that makes it hard for the Patriots is, you know, they didn't do anything when their owner was screwing around. You know, when he got caught, what did they do?
But again, it's the league that does it, from what Terry's telling me.
Yeah,
it's not
for the most
Patriots
part.
In their organization. It's the league. It's the league. So the Patriots wait for the league to decide what to do with the boss.
Yeah.
The Patriots waited for the league to decide what to do with Brett and the football deal. You know, so, I mean, it's an easier way to do it. You just kind of sit back and you let the league make all the decisions. That's a whole lot different than the college way of going about it.
Couple of other things before we go to the break. Big game going on right now in St. Louis, both in terms of the Braves a little bit, but much more the National League Central. Cardinals lead Washington 2-1, bottom seven. It started out Adam Wainwright, Max Scherzer. And when you get to Scherzer for anything, you've done something. Don't know how many of you saw it last night. Cool moment in Boston. Former Vanderbilt Commodore Mike Yastrzemski going back to Fenway where his grandfather was such a star 50 years ago. Carl Yastrzemski, who won the Triple Crown in 68 with the Red Sox. Well, Granddad was there to greet him, and he rewarded Granddad with a solo homer to dead center early in that game, and he got a standing ovation from the Fenway crowd. That had to be cool deal. Yeah. How about that?
That's pretty nice.
I love Carl Yastrzemski. Yeah, that's neat, man. I'd love to have been there.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen all of that, man. What a neat night.
Take a look at the film footage. Go online because it's out there and available.
I will.
After the break, we're going to talk a little Florida and Tennessee. David Waters will give us a little bit of the Gator breakdown. He is the host of Gators Breakdown, and he will join us in about 3 minutes. From the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, you're listening to WNSR Nashville Sports Radio. Want to say a hello to my buddy James Warren. He was a classmate of mine, 1977 at BGA. He's also the owner of Sir Speedy of Berry Hill, and James joins us. James, what do you want people to know about your business?
Well, here's the thing. If you look anywhere, you can see signage. A business without signage is like a car with a flat tire. Not going anywhere fast. Sir Speedy Berry Hill can change that. We are a trusted resource for sign design and production. Whether you need trade show displays, banners, posters, directional signs, window decals, wall graphics, you name it, Sir Speedy Berry Hill's sign capabilities can help your business get noticed.
Okay, tell them where you're located, all the particulars.
So we're at 2400 Phelps Avenue off of Melrose in lovely Nashville, Tennessee. Our phone number is 615-832-9511. You can look at us at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. Email us at print@SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. We've got you.
Looking for future leaders we can trust and believe in? Look no further than the high school student athletes right here in Tennessee. High school sports teach young people how to be effective leaders. It begins by making their grades and being on time for practice. It includes learning to listen, following directions, accepting responsibility, being a good role model. And it's about respect for officials, opponents, the rules, and each other. The result? It transcends sports. It gives us hope for the future. High school sports, there's so much more than just a game. This message presented by the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association and the Tennessee Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Thursday, October 17th, your friends at Pickers Vodka invite you to the third annual Hardest Harvest Celebration and Whiskey Release at Pennington Distilling Company in the Nations. This free event runs 5 to 9 and will feature live music from Rebirth Brass Band, Roots of a Rebellion, and Lady Couch. There will also be games, a kids area, food from Urban Grub, the Grilled Cheesery, and Smoke It All, and of course, your favorite Pennington Distilling Company beverages. To learn more, follow Pickers Vodka on social media.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
And your listeners need to know that the nicest guy at SEC Media Days is Johnny Ballpark Franks.
You've always been so kind.
It's just true. It's easy to tell the truth, Johnny.
Johnny Ballpark Franks Show.
I'm constantly amazed when I drive in. I often stay at the Omni downtown.
Weekdays starting at 4 from Nashville's Sports Radio, WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
2:24 as we welcome all of you back in. Let's go right down to Gainesville. David Waters is the host of Gators Breakdown, and he joins us by phone. David, thanks for taking the time to do this.
No problem. No problem at all.
So you know the story. 10, 15, 20 years ago, this was a nasty, filthy rivalry that was guaranteed to either be CBS at 2:30 or in prime time. And obviously, it's lost some of its luster. It's an 11 o'clock in the morning game, which no one could have imagined 15 years ago. Is it still the rivalry it used to be?
I don't think so. Maybe from the Tennessee side of things, because when you lose in these games, you know, you don't really like the team that you're losing to. But for Florida, you know, it kind of transitioned. When they were, you know, had that streak against Tennessee, then the game against LSU started having more national implications. And every year that was a game for, you know, positioning in the SEC and then, you know, national title race, you know, back in like 2005, 2006, 2007, you know, when those teams were competing for national championships. So that kind of took the place of Florida, Tennessee, and many Florida fans' eyes as the years went on. But I think, you know, you go back into the 90s and, you know, when Florida was, you know, Peyton Manning never beat Florida. And then you go to 2001 and Tennessee upset Florida in the Swamp. You know, there's still plenty of memories that I think both fan bases can point back to, that when these two teams still play, you still feel dislike for that other team.
Most everybody knows by now what went on with Florida a week ago. Felipe Franks has the season-ending injury, and Kyle Trask comes in and looks like Peyton Manning. Did that surprise that staff that he was that good?
For the fan base, I think it's a surprise. For the staff, I mean, they'll tell you no, just because, of course, you know, that's their backup quarterback. He's going through the reps. He has the same playbook. He's going through all the meetings and everything as well. But I think it had to, or at least they didn't know what to expect. And then for him to go out there on that first drive and hit four out of his first five passes and lead Florida to a touchdown in that first drive, and then that helps Florida to a 19-0 fourth quarter, where that was the difference in the comeback victory versus Kentucky. So, I don't really know what they expected. I still don't think they expected it to be that smooth, to be that good, to come away and basically be the difference in the game. I think the team rallied around Felipe Franks' injury a little bit. You saw the wide receivers. You saw Kyle Trask around Felipe Franks when he was in pain there on the field before he got carted off the field. And I think it was a rallying point for this team. The defense played better as well, and given the offense back and given them multiple opportunities to go score. But, you know, for, you know, Kentucky helped a little bit, I think, with the soft zone coverage, because they didn't know what to expect either, I don't think. They were beat up in the secondary a little bit. They didn't really know what Kyle Trask was going to bring to the table either. But the, you know, the all-important thing is, can he carry that Kentucky performance over into his first starting game against Tennessee Saturday?
Well, let me ask the ugly question. If Felipe Franks had stayed healthy, do they beat Kentucky?
It certainly didn't look like it, and I don't know. What was hurting Florida while Felipe Franks was in the game is they were still trying to run the ball, and they were still trying to get a run game established. And for the third game in a row, all three games of the season so far, it wasn't going. By the time he was injured and you were in the fourth quarter, Florida didn't really have much of a, you know, choice but to get the passing game going and start passing the ball more than running. So I do think Felipe Franks could have done the things Kyle Trask did in that fourth quarter if they were just going to pass the ball, if they were just going to, you know, because as I said, there was also another difference of Kentucky getting beat up around the same time as well and losing the secondary players. So, but I do think the team rallied around Franks' injury. So maybe Felipe Franks would have played well enough. I'm not so sure everybody else around him, especially the offensive line, would have played well enough for the comeback victory.
David Waters is on the line with us from Gators Breakdown. Watson, the floor is yours.
Thanks, George. Dave, got a couple of things for you. Number one, how is everybody? What a devastating injury, and to a very popular player on the team. How are the players handled this? Are they handling it in a positive? We're going to regroup here and we've won one already and let's get going? Or just talk a little bit about that and how the community and the players have handled that injury, because that was really tough and really tough for Felipe.
Yeah, you know, it's fair to criticize Felipe Franks for the player that he is on the field, but the criticisms of him, and especially going back to the Miami game, him talking to the camera, talking to the fans, that's who he is. He cares a whole lot, and that's the thing about Felipe Franks. He really does care. He's a guy who didn't get in trouble off the field. He was a model student, a model football player, a model person, and never in trouble off the field. And I think this hit Dan Mullen kind of hard, too, because of the growth Felipe Franks has taken since Dan Mullen's become head coach. He was 13-3 as a starter under Dan Mullen. That turned some things around. Yes, there were some antics on the field, but you know, it wasn't hurting anybody, maybe but himself, if you want to look at it that way. But he played better with a chip on the shoulder, and that's the way Felipe Franks was going to do anything. But as the person, you know, he was about as good as it gets. So I do think that the team is using it as a rallying point, and then the staff as well, just to kind of maybe transition in the way Kyle Trask has approached it as well, and being at every meeting, being with Felipe Franks, giving Felipe Franks a competition the last two seasons, I think gives a lot of confidence in the rest of this team as well. And the performance from Saturday night probably goes a long way as well, him coming in and improving everything. But, you know, Florida has sent out, as far as community goes and the university, they've sent out plenty of things that people want to sit and send their get well wishes to Felipe Franks and the like. That you know, Florida has that information out there, so you know, they're handling it the right way. And you know, it is tough for Felipe Franks as well. One of the quarterbacks in the SEC in the country, if he was able to take that next step and lead Florida to even bigger things this year, we just won't get the chance to see that now.
Yeah, and my second question kind of is from that. How do you see the offense changing with the change of quarterback? I thought I saw a little bit more athleticism than people think in Trask, and then running a little option. And, you know, what changes do you expect to see with a change at quarterback?
If Kyle Trask is the quarterback that's going to be in there most of the time, that probably is the way it's going to look. I don't think play calls change all that much, and there may be certain plays he likes more, but the playbook from Felipe Franks to Kyle Trask is exactly the same. I don't think it's whittled down any. I don't think you're giving him any more plays. I think those two guys have the same playbook. Where it will change is if Florida starts giving Emory Jones some more snaps. And, you know, he doesn't have the experience in college football, especially, you know, playing as much as Felipe Franks. Kyle Trask has been there for a couple more seasons, so he has more experience being on campus than more so Emory Jones. But Emory Jones is that type of running quarterback that, you know, of course, Dan Mullen's been known to get more out of when his offenses are clicking. So it's going to be how much Emory Jones is on the field and for that offense to change. And he's not the power runner necessarily that you would have seen with Tim Tebow or Dak Prescott or even Felipe Franks at times, a little more elusive. So it will be interesting to see how much, you know, I don't think Kyle Trask will run as much as we saw Felipe Franks that time, because now you kind of have to protect him a little bit. He needs some quarterback depth. You don't want another quarterback getting hurt. If the quarterback's legs are going to start hurting teams, that may start coming more from Emory Jones when he's in the game. But he's a better thrower than I think people give him credit for as well. So yeah, I do look with this game coming up Saturday against Tennessee. If Emory Jones is in there early, I wouldn't be surprised if you see him passing more than running, just to see if he can catch Tennessee's defense off guard.
Wanted to ask you this about the Gators. You know, one of the things that, you know, coming into the season, there was a lot of hype coming off of the 2018 season and the job that Dan Mullen did there. And then out of the gate, they kind of struggled a little bit before defeating Miami. And then last week, they had to rally to beat Kentucky. Do people down there maybe feel like that the Gators have underachieved a little bit thus far this year despite those two wins?
Yeah, I think you could say they underachieved and found ways to win the games. And that was the script for a little bit last year as well. You know, early in the season, you lost that Kentucky game. This time you win it. You go on the road and you blow out Tennessee at Tennessee. But then you had to go to Starkville the next week and, you know, scrap up a victory any possible way they could, and then have another ugly victory versus LSU. as well. So there were times last year where it didn't look good, but Florida was able to walk out with wins, and then by the end of the season, you know, they were a 10-win team. So, but because of that, yeah, you did expect a better start this year. And it, you know, a lot of it's just been kind of self-inflicted. When you go back to the Miami game, and it's been with all the experience returning, with the experience you had at quarterback, the experience you had at running back, all these receivers, and you play ugly. You had some turnovers. You had some bad interceptions. You had running backs not being able to catch a pitch there. And a lot of it boils down to this offensive line as well. That's where the inexperience comes in, and we've seen that the first three games. Florida has not been able to run the ball like we thought they'd be able to. We thought this offensive line would be further along in run blocking and not the pass blocking that we've seen the first three games. And the Dan Mullen offense works best when that run game is going, whether it be the quarterback, whether it be the running back. But you're not getting that because the offensive line is just letting defenders push them around a little bit. So, yeah, we know they're young, that we knew the potential was there for this to happen with that offensive line. And that's going to have to be a priority one for this team to take the next step. This offensive line is going to have to grow as the season goes on. You know, the other side of the ball in defense, they just got to get healthy right now. C.J. Henderson questionable this week against Tennessee. Amari Burney will be back. Jabari Zuniga missed the Kentucky game after one play. He was in a boot yesterday, so we'll see if he plays again this week. So for as far as the defensive side of the ball, Florida just needs to get healthy.
And in good times and bad, this Florida-Tennessee rivalry, at least from the Vols' perspective, they've always regarded the Gators as that early measuring stick of how they stack up in the SEC East and in the SEC period. With the Vols having fallen on hard times for about the last decade or so, how is the rivalry perceived down there among Florida fans and Florida players and coaches?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I think in the fans' eyes, you have Georgia, FSU, or 1A, 1B. That you could put those around. But then it's been the LSU game that's kind of crept up and become this big, nasty rivalry game while Tennessee's kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. But I know, for me personally, you know, covering Florida and being somewhat of a Gator fan, it's just I don't forget what Tennessee did in 2001, and that game always comes around there. But for this staff, you know, Dan Mullen was around 2005, 6, 7, and 8, and you know, the Florida Tennessee rivalry still meant something back then. So I can see where right now, and Florida players have been asked about it, and LaMichael Pirine, I think, even at SEC Media Days, went back and said Tennessee's not really a rivalry game anymore. So for a lot of the Florida players, just because Florida's had a lot of recent success, almost a decade of success against Tennessee, a lot of Florida players just don't see it the way the fan base does.
Hey, David, real quickly before we let you go, what's the forecast look like at noon Gainesville time Saturday?
Last I saw, some sun in the 80s, mid-80s, so we might get a little bit of a fall break, but that sun's out at noon. You know, if it's 85, it'll still feel like around 95.
Hey, thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
David Waters hosts Gators Breakdown, does a good podcast, and we thank him for taking the time to be with us. Real quickly, St. Louis has hit Max Scherzer and Washington with a three spot. It's now 5-1 Redbirds, top of the eighth inning. That is not good news for the Cubs or Milwaukee. And by the way, at the moment, Washington is the wild card that would host, but suddenly the Cubs and Milwaukee, dead even. Milwaukee's been on a big winning streak that I think has reached 10 games, and they have caught the Cubs, and that's got the city of Chicago in a little bit of worry. 2:38, we'll come back and talk a little Eli Manning. So stay tuned. You're listening to WNSR. Nashville Sports Radio. I want you to listen really close to a message from the folks at ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis. Your credit reports are your financial report card. A good credit report is necessary to get a mortgage, car loan, and credit cards. Even getting rental housing insurance or a job is dependent on your credit report. Here's what blows me away.
40 million consumers have an error on their credit report, and 2 million of those are so serious they're likely being overcharged for mortgages, credit card debts, auto loans, insurance policies, and other financial obligations. If you want to know more about your credit report, I want you to contact Bill Kalutis at shieldlawgroup.com or call Bill at 615-742-8020. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14, 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street. Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly, he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hugged goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Lynch Tree Service has been helping Middle Tennesseans for more than 25 years. Whether you need tree pruning and maintenance, stump grinding, or even land clearing, Lynch Tree Service is here to help. Their number one priority is to provide customers with the best tree services possible at an extremely competitive price. For more info, give them a call at 615-649-4584 or go online, lynchtreeserve@aol.com.
In the heart of downtown Nashville, the Southern Steak and Oyster is a unique and animated eatery that offers an authentically Southern adventure with a twist. Whether it be breakfast, lunch, dinner, weekend brunch, the Southern Steak and Oyster has a variety of dining experiences. Visit thesouthernnashville.com to peruse menus, make reservations, purchase unique products, or book business and private parties. Located at 153rd Avenue South, the Southern Steak and Oyster offers free valet or validated self-parking. Give the Southern Steak and Oyster a call at 615-724-1762 or visit thesouthernnashville.com.
.com 241 as we welcome all of you back on a Wednesday afternoon to the George Plaster Show. Late word out of New York, Sportsnet is reporting that Eli Manning will not waive his no-trade clause and apparently is accepting his new role and vows to support Daniel Jones, who will get his first NFL start, rookie from Duke, when the Giants go to Tampa on Sunday. So let me toss to you all the same hand grenade that everybody else has been throwing out there. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer?
He's close. He's close. And I'll go ahead and say this, George. I think one of the reasons that he is open to being a backup to this kid, Daniel Jones, is probably because he knows him through David Cutcliffe and that connection. I think that may be one of the reasons he's more open to mentoring this kid than maybe he normally would be if it was anybody else.
I think you're spot on that. The relationship with Cutcliffe is the link to all of them.
And as far as whether Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer, I would say probably, I would say eventually he is, but I don't think he gets in on the first ballot. I think he'll be a second, third, fourth ballot guy, kind of like Kurt Warner was.
Watson, what do you think when you hear that question?
The question about him, Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said this a couple of days ago. I think he'll get in. It'll just be a little later. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion, and I think MVP of both of those. So, I mean, he's going to get in. He deserves to get in. You win two Super Bowls as a quarterback, you deserve to be in. And I think, is there a quarterback that's won a Super Bowl that's not? That might be something interesting.
Jim Plunkett is the only one that's won two.
Jim Plunkett is the only one that's won two that's not in. and this stat too.
And why you figure that is, not to change the subject, why in the world would Jim Plunkett not be in if he's won two Super Bowls?
Well, let me ask you this, Watson. Okay. To me, getting in the Baseball Hall of Fame is a lot tougher than getting in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Jim Plunkett,
I agree with that,
had a length of time where he was a very good quarterback, but he also had a long period of time where he was much ado about nothing. So that's not a Hall of Fame career.
Earlier.
He also had a losing
record. Quit earlier, then you get in the Hall of Fame.
So he had a losing record overall.
Two Super Bowls and quit.
Well, okay.
And Manning's 116-116. Manning doesn't have a winning record. He's dead even.
So
dead
if
116-116, I think.
Eli Manning would not get in a Baseball Hall of Fame. The ability to say, well, I've won two Super Bowls, however you would translate that into baseball, would not get you in the Hall of Fame.
Well, there's another stat. There's another stat that is even more telling than that as far as getting in. Every quarterback that is eligible that has been to three, that has started three Super Bowls, is in the Hall of Fame. The only ones that are not are Brady and Peyton Manning. Every one other quarterback that has started three Super Bowls is in the Hall of Fame.
Go ahead, Watson.
There's a big difference to me, guys. It's the position. If you're a free safety and you win two Super Bowls, that means nothing. If you're a quarterback that led the team to two Super Bowls, that's a big difference. And I think that's why he will get in. It will not be his one-loss record. The other thing I think is a big difference in getting in the Hall of Fame in the two different sports, baseball's a stat sport. You get in on your stats. Football is not as much of a stat sport. Sometimes these guys get in on winning. Look how many of the Green Bay Packers are in the Hall of Fame. And that was for a reason. They were in Super Bowls. They won Super Bowls. And that's the reason they're in, more than just there's a lot of guards and tackles out there that could get in. But though a lot of those guys have gotten in, I think they deserve to get in because they were on great teams and won Super Bowls. So I think that's a big difference, the position over anything else, being the quarterback of the Super Bowl team.
You're exactly right about teams, because you think, how many players from the Steelers of the 1970s are in the Hall of Fame?
Yep.
Or the Dolphins of the early 70s, or the Cowboys of the 90s, or the 49ers of the 80s? You mentioned the Packers. And then you take the teams that got there and didn't win, like the Bills of the 90s, the Vikings of the 70s, that had probably just as much individual talent as those teams that won those Super Bowls, but I don't believe there are as many players in from those teams. Like, for example, Jim Marshall is not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and he should be. That's my personal opinion. He should be. But again, we can go on that forever. But I think that's the biggest difference, George. Baseball is much more of a stat Hall of Fame. Football is too. A lot of people get in on their stats, but a lot of people get in off of winning and how much they won. And if they were on one of those teams that won quite a few Super Bowls, a lot of those guys get in.
Well, in the offensive and defense, well, defensive line, you at least have tackles and stat numbers.
Sacks.
But in offensive line,
there are.
Yeah, how do you quantify statistically?
Well, I know that one of the things that has been done, you know, like what John McClain did for Bruce Matthews and Mike Munchak when he presented them, and then one of the things that was done for Kevin Mawai, just to name the three that have a connection here to the Titans franchise, the fact that, you know, they may not have stats, but what they will do is they'll go and they'll interview, you know, defensive tackles and defensive ends who are Hall of Fame caliber and went against those guys and say, how tough was Mike Munchak to, you know, when he was blocking you, or that sort of thing. Or they'll look at the 2,000-yard rushing season that Chris Johnson had when Kevin Mawai was the anchor of that line. And that's a lot on how guards, centers, and tackles are evaluated when it comes to Hall of Fame.
Okay, Watson, I'll give you one. First of all, in baseball, here is something that I hear a lot on the baseball front. The Hall of Fame is for the greats. It's not for the really good. It's only for the greats. take, for instance, one that's near and dear to me. Dale Murphy is a back-to-back most valuable player in 82 and 83 as a member of the Atlanta Braves. He finishes, help me with this, Terry, with less than 400 homers.
398, I believe was the number.
I knew it was close. And so while he was really, really good, when he tailed off, you know, at about age 33, he doesn't have the longevity numbers that a lot of people that have gotten in the Hall have had. But I would claim if he were a football player and could say, I'm a two-time most valuable player, he's in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he should be in. Again, I love watching him play, and I'm a little prejudiced because I thought he's a great guy and a competitor and a class act, and I wish that they use even more of that. But I do think baseball goes much more on stats and career stats and how long you played and than football does. But football is a shorter sport than baseball. You're going to play baseball longer than you're going to play football. What do they say the NFL is? Not for long?
Yep.
I mean, it's a different world, man, and there's a lot of these positions where you just don't make it 5 or 6 years. And like you said, I'm not sure a guy like Plunkett didn't hurt himself by hanging around when he should have probably quit. And it may have cost him a Hall of Fame before it's all said and done. So football to me is, it's completely different Hall of Fame. They do it in a lot of different ways, but I honestly believe, George, they have to, because it is a different sport and the longevity is not the same.
So let me make sure I've got both of you saying he will get in, but both of you are in agreement it won't be first ballot.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. By the way, let's try this one. Do you think the Giants end up going back to him, not because of injury, but because of poor performance and deciding we got to go back to him?
I don't think that. I think that would be a move of desperation. I think they have hitched their wagon to this kid, Daniel Jones, and for better or worse, I think they have to find out what he is and how good he can be.
No, I don't think they go back. If they're not doing well, they're going to be so far down that it won't matter. They'll be out of the race, and they're going to let him get his reps. And if he's doing well and they move up, then they're going to be happy, and that's what they want anyway. So only injury, in my opinion, brings Eli back. But it's classy in a lot of ways for Eli to stay. I think it says something, though. In my opinion, it's saying this is it. I'm 38 years old, and I don't believe when the year's over, he'll end up somewhere else. That was an interesting – I've been waiting to see how he handled it and if he wanted to go somewhere or not. Now, he may sit, George, like a lot of these guys, like somebody will retire and then come back. He may sit and miss it and then want to give it a shot next year somewhere else. That'd be the only way. But I thought it was kind of telling with him saying, I'm going to sit right here and help. But I also think that – he's got a lot of team in him. He's a class act, and he thinks about team. I don't think he's one of the ego guys near as bad as some of the others. And I thought it was classy in one way, and another way I look at it and say, this may be telling everybody this is it. I'm 38 years old, and I've had a wonderful time.
You know, though, when we watch tomorrow night, Terry, Jacksonville, that is a likely landing spot at some point with Eli Manning because of the relationship with Coughlin.
True. You know, the thing that I wonder is this Eli saying that I don't know that I've got enough left in the tank to go help a Jacksonville or a Pittsburgh or a New Orleans get to the Super Bowl or at least get to the playoffs. Do you think that's the case?
Well, you do wonder because it didn't sound like an overly confident, you know, screw this, I'm good enough to play, and by golly, I'm going
right.
to.
Right, I mean, because that was Peyton's attitude when the Colts let him go.
Yeah.
He was determined he was going to come back and be as good as ever.
We will wrap up the 2 o'clock hour when we come back. At 3 o'clock, we will get knee-deep into this story that Chris Lowe has written about Lane Kiffin and his year at Tennessee. I would encourage any and all of you to read it on ESPN.com. It's hysterical, and it's also very telling. Stick around.
Life is all about perfect pairings. Sweet and salty, naughty and nice, hot and cold. Well, add instant and jackpot to the list because that's what you'll get when you add Quick Cash to your next Tennessee Cash play. Quick Cash is a simple way to turn one game into two. With Quick Cash, you'll have a chance to win up to $500 instantly right there at the register. Plus, you'll still have a chance to win the Tennessee Cash drawing later. Get the best of both worlds and get twice the fun. It's Quick Cash with Tennessee Cash, only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Powerball is throwing the ultimate party, and one lucky winner is going to win $1 million. Introducing Powerball's New Year's Rockin' VIP experience. You and a guest could take the trip of a lifetime to New York City, packed with exclusive access to the biggest events in town. Plus, you'll receive an entry for a chance to become the first Powerball millionaire of 2020. Announced live on Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve. The only way to win is to play Powerball, so get your ticket today. Brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. Visit TNLottery.com for details. Please play responsibly.
Life is all about perfect pairings. Sweet and salty, naughty and nice, hot and cold. Well, add instant and jackpot to the list because that's what you'll get when you add Quick Cash to your next Tennessee Cash play. Quick Cash is a simple way to turn one game into two. With Quick Cash, you'll have a chance to win up to $500 instantly right there at the register. Plus, you'll still have a chance to win the Tennessee Cash drawing later. Get the best of both worlds and get twice the fun. It's Quick Cash with Tennessee Cash, only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
It's summer, y'all, and you know the drill. It's time to stay chill and get your fill of all the cool games that you like to see. The August Instant Ones from Tennessee. You could scratch a blackjack for just a dollar. Win 20 grand on a payday multiplier. Big Orange 8s could take your cash even higher, but not like $1 million mega multiplier. That's no joke. These are the ones. The August Instant Games that are tons of fun. Brand new from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Just play responsibly.
When it's time for new flooring in hardwood, the choices can be mind-numbing. Who do I call? Who can I trust? Locally, Braza Flooring is a leading expert in floor installation and services and makes the process easy. Braza Flooring offers a wide selection of flooring options and hardwood supplies and will work with you to help you decide which selection works best for you. Once you make a decision, they'll handle the rest. Nobody does hardwood floor installation better than Braza Flooring, and they do it fast without sacrificing quality. Braza Flooring provides the best service at an affordable price. Their passion for flooring and extensive experience means no job is too big, too small, or too difficult. Call 678-826-7798. That's 678-826-7798. Or go online at BrazaFlooring.com and follow them on Instagram. Braza Flooring, where they strive to please and guarantee complete satisfaction.
Westwood One is the exclusive home for Monday Night Football. Hi, everyone. This is Kevin Harlan. Join Hall of Famer Kurt Warner and me Monday nights to listen to all the thrilling NFL action. Aaron Rodgers, Saquon Barkley, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes. The league's top players are on display on Monday nights right here.
Live on WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Ensworth is a kindergarten through 12th grade co-educational independent school located on two campuses in Nashville, Tennessee. The school incorporates a nurturing community with a challenging program to create a unique, joyful environment where students can develop the intellectual agility, self-confidence, and discipline they need to excel. Visit our website at ensworth.com to learn more.
.256, and before we end the hour, Terry, give us some Titan news. I guess they're getting ready to fly to Jacksonville.
They already be in the air, George, and they'll have three guys that are listed as out. Those are Kevin Pamphiel, who, like I said, has had arthroscopic knee surgery. David Fluellen, who's nursing a hamstring injury. And Chris Milton, the special teams cornerback that they claimed off waivers from the Colts, is out with a collarbone injury. Wesley Woodyard did not practice yesterday, and he is questionable with a quadriceps injury.
Okay. If he doesn't play, then what?
Well, he's been in a backup role this year anyway, behind Jayon Brown and Rashawn Evans. But he's still a valuable guy because there are packages they run that include him, and there are and he's obviously a key contributor on special teams. One thing is they'll probably get Reggie Gilbert, this guy that they acquired from Green Bay at the end of the preseason. He did practice yesterday, so there's a pretty good chance that he'll be up and active tomorrow.
Sure looks like kind of a 16-13 low-scoring rugby scrum.
It could definitely be that. I think, you know, one of the things the Titans have going for them, even though they're on the road and Thursday night road teams don't usually fare very well, Mariota and Derrick Henry have both have a history of playing really well against the Jaguars. So maybe one or both of them will step up and perform like they have in the past against the Jags. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. 2 o'clock.
George,
yeah, go ahead, Watson.
Quick. There's going to be a big offensive night. We're going to have a good offensive night. Put it down.
Book it.
That's my prediction.
That would be
we're
a book
have
it.
A good offensive night.
Okay.
You can go ahead and book it. I'm not booking it with any cash.
Right.
I'm booking it.
You're booking it. Because when I book it.
Have a good offensive night. We're going to respond to what happened last week.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like my book it's are any good. Okay, the music means we're done. But when we come back, an hour that you're going to want to hear, and I'm going to want some of you who are University of Tennessee fans to chime in. Great story on ESPN.com about 2009 Lane Kiffin at Tennessee.